Welcome to the podcast of Data and Analytics in Business. We'll learn from the leading industry experts using data and analytics to solve the problems and create values in practice. We'll also learn where the industry is heading to and how data and analytics will shape the industry in the future. Most importantly, how they are preparing their business for digital transformation and disruption in the future. I'm your host, Jason Tan, and thank you for listening. In this episode, we have got Adam Mandra, all the way from the United States of America. Adam is a very successful business owner running a values group in Los Angeles with a few different companies in the portfolio. He is also a vivid writer and a contributor to the publishing company like Forbes, HuffPost, and also Thrive Global. He will be sharing with us about a lot of the leadership and cultural building, all of those lessons from his own experience, but also from a lot of the business leaders that he interviewed in the United States. Some of these people that he has interviewed, including the billionaire inventor, Dr. Gary Michelson, and also the Emmy Award winner, Christina Sindelge, and also some of the admirer in the United States military sector. So I hope you enjoy about how to build a culture and a leadership at your organization and how to apply some of these lessons for building your company and your organization. If that is one key thing that you can take away from this interview, I would really say have a listen to Adam Mandra about what he say about treating people right and making sure having the right people surrounding you as part of your journey in building a successful organization, and how is that matter to your leadership style. Thank you. Hi, Adam. Thank you so much for coming on to the Analytics Show podcast. I'm super excited to have you here. You are our second guest from United States America, and super excited to hear about what is going on, how you guys are running data and analytics in LA and in United States.
Jason, thank you so much for having me. Pleasure is mine. Really excited to be here.
Let's get started. So tell us a bit of the story behind the Values Group, which is the company that you own and you run.
Well, I mean, where do you even want to get started? How do we get started on such a deep and impactful and big question? I mean, like this, Jason, this could be our entire show just talking about the Values Group.
Take your time.
I'll give a little bit of an overview for listeners. We run a few different businesses in a few different industries. We have an office furniture company called Beverly Hills Chairs. So we're the leading sellers of refurbished brand name chairs. So the number one best-selling office chair in the U.S. is called the Herman Miller Aeron chair. And Jason, I know you have a big international audience. It's also a really popular chair internationally. And what we do is we sell the Herman Miller Aeron, which retails at around $1,200. We sell that chair refurbished at around $500. So that's one of our companies, Beverly Hills Chairs. We have another company called Custom Tobacco. You go to customtobacco.com and you can create your own fully customized private label cigars in real time. So everything is fully customized from the shape, the size, the blend, the wrapper, the filler, the flavor, all the way to the cigar band. We sell to a lot of event planners and gift givers. And we have a software development company. We do a lot of technology consulting and custom software development. We work with early stage to middle market companies across all kinds of industries and work with a lot of nonprofits as well. I personally do a lot of writing and speaking. I speak about leadership. I speak about entrepreneurship. I speak about management, about marketing. And I have a podcast like you, Jason. So if any listeners enjoy this podcast, I've got one too. It's called 30 Minute Mentors. You can tune in once a week. I go one-on-one with one of the most successful people in the world for 30 minutes on how they got to the top and how listeners can get to the top as well. So Jason, hopefully I gave you a little bit of info on the Values Group and on me, but happy to share as much or as little as you'd like.
Most certainly. The podcast is something that I'm aware of, and I'm going to share the link to the podcast. I have actually always wanted to get on to listening to your podcast. I see that there was one interview that you had with this American businessman. Forgot his name. I'm terribly sorry about that, but I'm super excited to wanting to hear that. Now, speaking of the leadership writing, as that is probably the topic that I want to focus on today. How to build a culture and how to build leadership for the organization to be on data-driven and analytic-driven. So share with us how you do that through Thrive Global and 30-Minute Mentor podcast, which is something that where you do a lot of writing. And for the benefit of the audience, Thrive Global is a platform owned and run by Aliana Huffington. Is that correct?
It is, yes.
Great. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the work that you do over there?
Sure. So I started an interview series in Thrive Global. It's called Lessons in Leadership. I go one-on-one with all kinds of leaders, leaders of well-known organizations, founders, CEOs, well-known athletes, celebrities. I've done over 300 interviews in Thrive Global in my Lessons in Leadership series. And they're really easy to read. They're quick, anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 words on how the person I'm interviewing got to the top, a really quick section on that, and then some snippets on their best advice on key subjects. So it's something that I've done now for a couple of years. It's fun. I enjoy doing it. Whoever reads these, I think, can get value out of each and every one of the interviews. Some of the interviews are a little bit longer than others, but each of the interviews has really good advice and really good content and is very easily consumable, which is nice. What that did for me was it gave me the framework for my podcast. I, for a long time, really wanted to take what I was doing in these one-on-one interviews and take it to the next level, because the Thrive Global stuff is great, but it really only is 1,000 to 2,000 words. You can read through them really quickly. What a podcast does is gives you the ability to take that kind of content and give listeners, instead of readers, but give listeners a much richer and deeper and more thorough experience. You can provide much more advice. You can provide just, to me, it's just a better experience. So I've been wanting to do it for a while. I obviously have a lot of other projects that I work on. I mentioned to you and to your listeners about the three different businesses that we have. So it took me quite a bit to actually take my vision and execute on it, but I set a deadline for myself and said, by January this year, I'm going to make this happen. By November of 2019, I'm going to start recording. By January of 2020, this show is going to launch. The rest is history. So we launched at the end of January, and as of today's recording, we have 17 episodes that are live, 30-minute mentors. It's all spelled out. You can find it at 30minutementors.com. You could find it on whatever your favorite podcasting app is, whether it's iTunes or Spotify or Google Play or however you're listening to this podcast. And on 30-Minute Mentors, what I do is I go one-on-one with the same kinds of people that I have in the Thrive Global Lessons in Leadership series, but I try to really pick the best of the best. So I'm interviewing founders and CEOs of household name companies. I'm interviewing generals and admirals. I'm interviewing leading celebrities and athletes. I'm interviewing people who audiences really want to hear from. The subtitle, the show, it's 30-Minute Mentors, Leaders to Listen to. So at the end of the day, I want listeners to really feel like they can tune in and enjoy each and every person they're listening to, regardless of what that person's background is and regardless of what the listener's background is. And my goal, Jason, is for anyone listening to be able to walk away from each episode with very valuable advice and insight that they could apply to their lives, to their careers, to help them excel personally and professionally.
With over 300 one-on-one interview with business leader in the state, what are the core principles that you commonly find in them that enable them to be a successful organization?
Yeah, really good question, Jason. And so many, again, this is another question that we could spend the entire show on. Jason, you asked some good questions. I'm a fan. So one of the big takeaways from my interviews with all these highly successful people is, first and foremost, the principles of effective leadership are applicable across verticals, across industries. It doesn't matter what business you're in. Doesn't matter if you're running a large company, if you're running a startup company, if you're in the military, if you're in sports, if you're in the entertainment business. To be an effective leader, to most effectively lead people, you need to follow the same core principles. That's something that, after doing a few of these, became as clear, hopefully, to anyone listening or reading as it was to me from the get-go. And what are those principles? What are some of those things that really matter, that are really important? First and foremost, it's all about your people. If you don't fundamentally love people, if you don't fundamentally enjoy being around people, serving people, connecting with people, doing what you do for the greater good of the people around you, you're in the wrong line of work. This is a people business. Leadership is a people business. Building businesses, entrepreneurship, business in general, it's all about people. To be a great leader, you've got to lead people. And to lead people, you've got to love people. So when it comes to building a winning organizational culture, you need to start with the understanding that it's all about your people. With every great person you bring onto your team, with every great person that you hire within your organization, all you're doing is enriching and enhancing your culture. Anytime you hire someone who doesn't fit in, anytime you hire someone who clashes with your culture, you're taking a big step back. Now, if you're a huge company, if you're a Fortune 500 business and you make a bad hire, it's not going to destroy your business. It might hurt a department. It might cost you a few dollars. But if you're a small company, if you're in a small entrepreneurial business, certainly my company, if we make a bad hire, that's terrible. It hurts every person in the organization. It completely destroys your culture. So that's the first thing that I implore everyone listening to recognize. And when you're building your culture, think about, what do the people who you're building the culture for want? What do they care about? What matters most and why? When people think about culture, they often think about ping pong tables and foosball tables and beer on tap. And those are the kinds of markers of culture that we tend to associate with companies like Google and Facebook. And I get it, they're important on some level. But what matters a lot more is how you treat people. Are you kind? Are you caring? Are you considerate? Are you creating an environment that respects people? Are you fair? What kind of work are you giving? Is it interesting? Are you able to create a culture focused on a mission that matters? Is your work important? Is it meaningful? These are the things that, as leaders, we need to think about all the time.
How could this principle be applied in building a data-driven culture at an organization level?
Yeah, another really good question, Jason. Every leader needs to focus, to whatever extent they can, on data. For big organizations, you have the luxury of having entire departments focused on big data. For a small entrepreneurial company, you might not have a data scientist. You might not have a team of data scientists, but you should absolutely incorporate the, Jason, I don't even want to say having a data-driven culture, having a data-driven mindset, having a data-driven philosophy. Every business, central in the fabric of what you do as a business, should have at its very basis an appreciation for data, for numbers, for truly, Jason, for truth. Because at the end of the day, what is data? Data is truth. Data is telling you what is going on. Data is the picture. And if you don't understand the numbers, if you don't understand what's going on, if you don't understand the reality on the ground, you're disconnected. So the key steps to building a data-driven culture, first and foremost, every leader in your organization has to truly and deeply appreciate just how important this is to your business's success. This isn't something that you farm out to a team. This isn't something you farm out to a team of data scientists. Now, if you are a big company, again, great. We have data scientists we can give this to. But leaders need to be invested in the performance of this as it relates to every element of the organization's function.
In building a data-driven culture, which approach would you find to work well for you? Or which approach that do you find that some of these business leaders are using, would you say is a top-down or bottom-up approach?
That's a good question. You know, I don't really think of things in terms of top-down versus bottom-up. I think that it's important for, I'll tell you how I try to approach it within my organization. I certainly don't approach my organization in any kind of top-down way. So I don't come in and say, this is how we do things. It's my way or the highway. This is the approach. This is how it's going to roll. At the same time, I do have a perspective on a lot of important issues, and I do try to air them and I do try to voice them. But everyone on my team has an equally important perspective, and I want to incorporate everyone's views and everyone's thoughts as relevant. So I don't try to look at it as top-down versus bottom-up. The way that I really try to think of it is leaders need to come in with a personal investment in big data. Leaders need to come in with a personal investment in the importance in which having a data-driven culture is going to positively impact the bottom line of your company. And leaders also can't force that perspective on their teams. Leaders need to ensure that everyone in their team actually buys in. So that's why I think it's, I know I'm not saying it as eloquently as I should, but I really think it's a combination of the two, where you need to be firm in your convictions, but you also need to ensure that people are buying in because they want to buy in and because they're genuinely persuaded and not because they're told this is an order, this is a command.
There are many companies, both enterprise and startup, and they often talk about their AI product or the use of AI in their product. Now, there are some really great application and real deal. However, it seems that it's not necessarily the truth in some cases. While I can understand the reason behind that, I just think it may create more harm than good in the long run. Why should the organization avoid jumping into the hype and bandwagon of AI?
Yeah, I mean, AI is a really interesting topic. I've interviewed a number of leaders in the field of AI. I personally am not a leader in the field of AI, but I've had the opportunity to interview quite a few. I've actually done a number on my leadership blog on adamendler.com. Listening happens to be interested on that topic, you can just go to adamendler.com and check some of those out. But I think what happens is people, whenever there's a new technology, and AI is a great example of this, there's a tendency to view it as the end-all, be-all, silver bullet, almost magic wand. And we live in a real world. There are no magic wands. There are great tools that we can use. There are great technologies that we can use. There are great things that we can incorporate into our businesses and into our lives. But we need to be realistic about what they are, what they can do, and what their limitations are. AI is a great example of just that. It is only as good as its inputs. It is only as good as who is managing the technology and who is overseeing and implementing the technology. You know, AI as AI isn't a silver bullet, but AI is a great piece of the puzzle, and AI obviously has enormous capabilities and enormous game-changing potential in so many different aspects of so many different businesses and candidly, so many different ways that we will be living life.
You serve as a board member at the University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA, Master of Applied Statistics program. Tell us a bit more about the works you do over there as an advisory board at UCLA.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Jason, that's a great program. I'm actually really happy that you are giving a shout out to it. So hopefully any listeners who are interested in pursuing an advanced degree in applied statistics will consider this program. So UCLA has a program. It's the MAS program, Masters of Applied Statistics. And my brother, Jordan, who is my business partner at the Velos Group, and I were invited to be on the advisory board for this program when the program kicked off. And we've been on this advisory board now for the last couple of years. And we try to provide whatever advice and assistance we can to the extent possible. So we actually just had a board meeting a couple of weeks ago. It was led by the chair of the department. And unfortunately, we can't do these meetings in this COVID period face-to-face. Last year's meeting was at a great hotel in LA. This year's meeting instead was on Zoom, which wasn't quite as fun, but it was still great to get a chance to connect with everyone and talk about how we can be as helpful to the students as possible. And this program just does a tremendous job providing anyone interested in learning the skill set in applied statistics, preparing them for a career in big data, preparing them for a career that, as an employer, I can tell you, all kinds of employers are finding extremely valuable. So I'm a big fan of this program.
Good. I am testing a new question for my interview. So you are the first one to try this one.
Okay.
Your most important first principle.
Most important first principle. My most important first principle?
Correct.
I mean, to me, my single most important principle is how we treat other people. My definition of success, which is definitely not your traditional definition of success, is if you, Jason, and I know that this show is all about data and statistics, and you can't measure this, but it's the net contribution in the lives of others. I don't think any statistician or anyone with an advanced degree in statistics or applied math can truly measure the impact that we make in the lives of other people. But when you ask me what matters to me most, that is the biggest marker of success. That is what's most meaningful to me. How can we make a difference in other people's lives? How can we be as helpful as possible to others? I definitely fall short in many ways, but I certainly try. Hopefully, this podcast in some way can provide some level of value to your listeners. Hopefully, my podcast, 30 Minute Mentors, provides value to listeners who are interested in learning from the great leaders who I interview. That's my definition of success.
Great. I think that people are really important, and everything that we do in this world is really fundamentally defined by the people that we have surrounding us. So I really agree with that. What is one book that you have read and thought it would have been better for your younger self to have? If so, why is this book?
Yeah, really good question. I think every book I've read, I probably would have been better served reading at a younger age. I can tell you that when I was in high school, I didn't do a whole lot of reading. And as I got older, I started reading more. And I wish that I would have read some of the books that I was assigned in high school, or at least instead of reading the books, maybe watch some of those movies, because there was a lot of value in them. But some of the books that have been most valuable to me over the years that I've really enjoyed reading, I've enjoyed Malcolm Gladwell's books. He's written great ones. Tipping Point is a great book. Blink, Outliers, all three of those are really great books for anyone listening. Michael Lewis is another great writer. Moneyball is one of my favorite books that focuses on statistics and data, which obviously everyone listening is passionate about and interested in. But the book that I always talk about when I'm asked is a book that I read after college. It's a book written by David Halberstam called The Best and the Brightest. And it's a book that I highly recommend to anyone interested in learning about how to manage, learning about organizational behavior, learning about how to better run any kind of company, business, team. It's a story about how the U.S. got into the Vietnam War. And while that might not necessarily seem like a topical book for those interested in business, there's so much applicable wisdom in there that I highly recommend it. Check it out.
Thank you so much, Adam. It has been wonderful to have you here talking about building a leadership and a culture at the organization, and in particular about the data-driven culture that allowed the company to continue to strive and excel in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason. Pleasure was mine. Really enjoyed it. Thanks again.